Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Riesmandel, and I am your host on today's program. What's wrong with public broadcasting? I know we can't get too deep into it, but my guest today is Bill Poorman, former chairman of the board of directors here at Community Radio WEFT, but also an experienced public radio journalist. And based upon his experience, he's going to tell us a bit more of what he thinks compromises this venerable institution. Do stay tuned. So Bill Poorman is an old friend of mine, since he was here at Community Radio WEFT, home of Media Geek, where he served on the board of directors and eventually served as one of WEFT's greatest board chairs, at least greatest in the time that I've been here, certainly. And then he went off and he worked in commercial broadcasting. He also worked as a journalist, as a reporter in public broadcasting, spending years at Michigan Radio. And he's not there right now. He's not working in public radio as a journalist. And that's by choice, because he does see some problems as a listener and as a journalist with public radio. So I want to take an opportunity to sit down with Bill on the phone and talk a little bit more about it and explore some of the good things and some of the compromises that seem to be inherent in the modern state of public broadcasting.
You worked in public broadcasting for how long?
Several years. It was right around 7 years that I was in both public radio and public TV.
And most of that was spent where?
On the radio side, and I had a variety of roles. I was a reporter, principally the local business reporter for Michigan Radio, which is three stations. It's at the University of Michigan. It's the NPR affiliate, public radio station, not a community radio station. And while I was there, I was a reporter, again, primarily on business, but I did a lot of filing for national programs as well, especially Marketplace, which is a national business program. But I was also news director at its sister public television station. I was the head of local productions there for right around a year. I was a local host for Morning Edition, you know, doing the weather and local news inserts and things like that. So variety of roles at the stations, plural.
Why did you get into public broadcasting?
You know how these things happen usually, by accident. Back when I was at Kent State University getting my undergraduate degree, I started as a student employee at WKSU, mostly on the music production side. That was principally a classical music station. And also housed a news operation, but principally a classical music station. So I started out with audio production, recording concerts and things like that, and kind of never left. I studied music in undergrad, and then after that I decided to switch gears in graduate school and went for a journalism degree and an MBA at the University of Illinois, and that's kind of when my news career really took off. And I was also at WILL in Champaign-Urbana, briefly as a part-time employee, but never kind of left public broadcasting. And then eventually, after a little bit of time in corporate media in downstate Illinois, I landed at Michigan Radio when we moved to southeast Michigan, and started as a freelancer covering the Detroit Auto Show, and eventually got on board full-time.
And why public media? I mean, why did you do that instead of staying in corporate media?
Journalism remains a calling. I mean, I think many people just get infected with the calling that is journalism. And if you've ended up in broadcast as opposed to print, which I did, there's no other place to go than public broadcasting. Clearly, one of the things that still distinguishes public broadcasting, radio and TV, from their commercial competitors is the quality of the product. It is just better journalism, flat out.
I mean, what is the nature of it? Is it because there's more long-form storytelling or news reporting? You know, I mean, I guess commercial radio is down to 30-second or 20-second stories, and you're still likely to hear 15-minute stories at times on something like NPR's All Things Considered. Is that an element of it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that has been preserved in public broadcasting, both radio and TV, is time. There obviously is that tension in commercial media between maximizing profit, which is maximizing time spent on commercials. I mean, that's the inventory. It's what it's called. And that's what they're really selling, is that inventory of ads and the eyeballs. Public broadcasting can hold the line on that, and they can keep the number of minutes spent on non-content, I guess you would say, as low as possible, because they have those multiple sources of funding. It's not just delivering the corporate underwriting, as it's called, ads, but you could call it underwriting, the corporate underwriting to the audience, or, you know, listing off your grand sponsors or something like that. Because, oh, membership, how could I have ignored it up to this point? Obviously, membership, when we're talking about the funding model, of course, is key. Boy, it's a bit silly that I left that out up until this point. But, you know, Michigan Radio, where I was, I'll give you an example, 50% of the budget came from listeners. Well, you know, you're beholden to whomever you get your money from. I mean, that's just the way the world works. Whoever pays the bills really calls the shots. And if 50% of your money is coming from a listener base who is really just buying your product straight out, it gives you insulation against things like having to expand time to allow for corporate underwriting or other things that would detract from the length of the stories.
Well, and so you and I have been talking recently about the fact that you still feel like there's something amiss within public broadcasting. You no longer work there now, although that's sort of a circumstantial situation as much as you decide to get out. But maybe you could tell me a little bit why. I mean, you're not happy with public broadcasting.
Yeah, I don't work in it. And I could still, again, I could see myself doing that. I guess my disagreements with public broadcasting come on a lot of fronts, and you got to remember, I come at this as a news guy, well, and as a Generation X news guy too. You know, one part is generational, and this is weird to say, but you know, it is very much a service that was crafted in the time of the baby boom generation, and the majority of, let's talk about the radio side, the NPR programs are geared clearly to their audience, which I think skews toward boomer. And NPR has tried many times to create programs that attract a younger audience, but with mixed success. So that's kind of always influencing the content, and you wonder where the younger folks are going to go. It's an elite audience. You know, public broadcasting, okay, what does the public mean? Well, there is that funding model using membership dollars principally. Okay, you could argue that's public, but who is that public? That public is an elite audience. They tend to have more college education, they tend to have more income, and their interests tend to reflect those kinds of things. So you get into a very weird thing where this service that was supposed to be created to serve America has actually skewed very much to an elite audience. Who's really serving those other interests? And then I guess this has been talked about quite a bit, obviously, but just, you know, the additional corporate support coming in, grant-driven journalism, where you get grants to do certain kinds of journalism. I mean, the funding model, even though it's still mostly membership, is changing. And like I said before, you're beholden to who gives you your money. And you know, it's always a tricky thing pointing out, you know, advertiser bias or anything like this in journalism, but you also can't deny that it's real. And that is having an impact, I think, as the system moves forward.
And so I wanted to ask you, from the standpoint of somebody who worked within the system, and what was your view of the money coming in and the effects it had?
Yeah. Listener dollars are always preferred. If it could have been funded, if any public broadcasting outlet of significant scale could be funded with all listener dollars, that would be the dream. Because you know you are delivering straight for the paying audience, as you pointed out, but for the audience, you know, for the people who are listening. Let's just talk about grants for a second. I mean, I was the reporter on a couple of grant-driven projects. And I had to be a news director managing grant driven projects. You know, if someone walks in the door or puts up a proposal or does something like this saying, we can help fund your operations for somebody, this is the way it's put, we can help fund your operations for somebody to cover these kinds of things. Now, I had a manager that I respected a lot, and her take on it was, well, if we were planning on doing it anyway, if it was on our priority list anyway, and we can get money for it, it's fine to do it. Well, of course, I mean, that's great if you can hold that line, but as you pointed out, with dwindling dollars, or with certainly just maybe an ethos within a given station to be constantly expanding revenue for good reasons, because costs are always going up, you might just go out and get dollars regardless of the strings that they attach. And grants come with strings. I mean, there's no way to avoid that. Hey, and you maybe you love it. You know, the station gets a big grant to do a bunch of healthcare reporting. So all of a sudden, you know, maybe 20% of the reports that are being put out by that staff are on healthcare. Well, healthcare is worthy, sure, but as a news director and as a news guy, you're sitting back and you're wondering, well, is healthcare really one-fifth of the news that's out there right now? Or with any grant like that kind of thing. Oh, technology is a big one. You might know more about this, but, you know, grants to cover technological issues, you know, the internet or whatever. I mean, those are a big deal, too. But is that really what the audience needed? Is that what news judgment backs up? So you do get distortional effects from granting agencies. You get distortional effects from corporations, but I had less experience with those, to tell you the truth. The corporate guys, they were buying the ears. They were buying the eyeballs. The grant givers were buying the content. And that, of course, is a much different thing. So listener money is always, always better.
And when you said listener money is better, was that an attitude of management?
Hey, all money coming in was a good thing.
Right.
All money coming in was a good thing. I mean, listener dollars were preferred, I think, for all the same reasons. But if you're trying to balance a budget or to grow a station, you do what you got to do.
And in terms of the grants, then, mm-hmm. and that's determining. So I've heard it. I heard it just today, listening to, I think, The World, which is a Public Radio International program,
right,
mentioning that a particular type of coverage was funded by a particular grant-making foundation. And you said, you know, they're buying that. So it means they're providing a grant that provides, I guess, salary for reporters,
right,
and other costs, which are incidental to that, to sending somebody somewhere and, you know, having to do reporting on the ground or whatever it may be. I mean, how deep do the tentacles go? Is it, you know, let's say, for instance, that that's a hypothetical, but let's say that a grant-making organization highly attached to the pharmaceutical industry, you know, I mean, they often have these nonprofit arms,
yeah,
gives money for healthcare coverage. How happy are they going to be if that coverage includes a critique of antidepressants?
Right.
Have you seen anything like it?
I have not seen anything specifically like that. But of course, like most things in journalism, right, it raises the specter of conflict of interest. And it makes you wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, all of these grant deals are different. Some funders just want to give you the money and have it be in a given area, like, you know, healthcare or business reporting or something like that. But others are much more specific. It might be something like what you're describing. The experience I had, and this was a weird one, we had a grant with the business school at the University of Michigan. And a component of that was that I would meet with the information officers over there at the business school to find out what they had going on,
mm-hmm,
at the business school. And it was a weekly meeting. Well, these folks were really good, and I would actually count them among my friends. And they got it, and they knew that they weren't supposed to put undue pressure on it, on me to pick up any particular story. However, it was built in. It wasn't just for business reporting as we saw fit. It was business reporting, but what's the University of Michigan have going on? And they were our licensee at Michigan Radio. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these things that come into play where, with public radio stations especially, where you're servicing the licensee to some degree. And then when certain divisions of the university, you know, start funding it too, well, they can put any kind of demands on it that they want. And that is true of every grant project. Now, others were certainly more hands-off, and I guess I do want to just repeat again. I mean, they were very good about it, but the pressure was certainly real. But there are other grants, like one that came from the state, which was an arts and humanities grant, and I did not work on that one, and I kind of had a slight hand in supervising what went on, but we had an arts reporter that handled most of that. But it was very loose. I mean, obviously, it had to be Michigan arts, and it had to show some geographic diversity. Like, you had to get up to the UP. You couldn't just stay down in Detroit or something like that. But that's pretty limited stuff. And then you produced a report at the end of the year. So grant-driven journalism can take on many different forms. It's really up to management, I think, at that point, to draw the line on what they're willing to accommodate. And, of course, the politics get even more complex when you're involving a licensee. As a listener, I've been listening to public broadcasting for a long time, like 20 years. And it does not, public broadcasting does not change its air sound with the speed of commercial broadcasting. I mean, if you were to look at commercial broadcasting 20 years ago, it wouldn't look anything like and sound anything like what it does today. More than like, I mean, things change. Public broadcasting doesn't change nearly that quickly. And every once in a while, you get flashes of things that come along that are really different. But it's kind of rare. It's a system that moves at a glacial pace. So as a listener, I'm kind of looking for something new, but certainly the new doesn't seem to get out there very quickly. And I'm not talking as some aggrieved program producer. I've never tried to pitch some brand new, big-time creative show. I just know what I hear. On the working inside of it point of view, as a journalist, speaking as a journalist, it just came down to really the influence of this grant-driven journalism. And maybe in some stations, the corporate-driven stuff is bad, too. I never personally got the underwriting team coming to me and saying, hey, you know, do a story on, you know, X, Y, and Z because, you know, we've got a corporate person that likes that stuff. I never saw that. Maybe that happens at different stations. I don't know. But certainly with the grant stuff, because, again, it goes straight to the content. The point of the grant is to make the content go in a certain direction by giving the resources to do it. And I saw that at the national level, and I saw that at the local level. And as a journalist, it bugged me. I got sick of it. I got sick of dealing with that inherent conflict. As you point out, maybe it's not so bad, but as a journalist, I didn't like it. And it turned me off. Will I never work in public broadcasting again? Well, maybe after this phone call, that's the case. But no, I would gladly go back in public broadcasting. But avoiding the grant-driven stuff would be great. However, right, you got to have a news organization that has resources. So how do you create a news organization that has resources to, you know, do what you say is covering the news without getting your money from somewhere?
What would be your ideal situation then? So let's put aside what exists, you know, and recognize, and I'm willing to recognize, of course, it's imperfect. Yeah. And not ideal, because as much as I do listen to public radio and watch much less watch public television, I don't find it to be perfect. There's a lot of things I wish it would do that it doesn't. I don't find the reporting to be perfect by any stretch. You know, and there are many things I wish were covered that aren't covered, or their perspectives included that aren't included. So taking that as a given, I mean, what would be the system, especially, you know, for you as a trained and working journalist, what would be the one you would like to work in?
Yeah. Well, the two models, based on what we've talked about here, that really appeal to me, would be what I was talking about initially, which would be the listener, you know, 100% listener supported model. But the other that I can envision, you know, over the course of our conversation here, is perhaps that 100% government funded model. I think the least interesting would be, for obvious reasons, is the corporate or grant-funded model, because that's what we already have, and that's been tried. So maybe this goes back to what we were saying. You know, what is it? What is it that makes this product different? And maybe it is that combination, principally that combination of the government funding, or at least. Well, there's less and less of that. But the government funding and the listener models, which, of course, is how the system started out. But then eventually it needed to go to the corporate dollars.
Well, those are bigger dollars. I mean,
when
we have listener-sponsored radio, community radio, which is a much smaller system, overwhelmingly is listener-sponsored predominantly. You know, station to station, you move from being 50% to closer to 75% being sponsored by listeners. But also community radio stations often less able to support a news operation or much more than keeping themselves on the air because of that.
You know, and that is a key trick, is how do you scale it up? You know, you mentioned how would I approach it as a journalist. Well, as a journalist, if you're going to create a news organization, you got to have bodies. I mean, good journalism requires people. It requires bodies. And it does not respond. Good journalism does not correlate necessarily to higher productivity in terms of, like, stories, right? You know, investigative journalists can spend months getting at some things. So, you know, how do you fund that person doing that while you're still delivering the rest of the news product? Well, what you need is a lot of people. And so you got to have a certain amount of scale, which means you got to have a certain amount of bucks. And so where do you get that pool of money so that you can hire a big enough staff and deliver a daily news product and have money left over to do those bigger projects? That's the tricky thing. And listener dollars, as you point out, doesn't really scale up that well. You kind of tap out the people, as you've pointed out, that can afford to pay. It's a dissatisfying answer, but it is just, it's incredibly difficult to envision a funding model for broadcasting or for any news media outlet that answers all the questions, that feels satisfactory.
What would make you feel better about being a public radio or public television journalist again?
Well, I'm not looking forward to working on a grant-driven project anytime soon. I'll say that right up front.
And with the grant-driven thing, I mean, do you feel there is a bit of an unspoken quid pro quo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
Where it hangs over you and you know that there are limits, even if someone doesn't write it down on paper.
Yeah, well, you know who's paying the bills, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know in a very direct way who is paying the bills. It's a very different kind of funding from just knowing that the nebulous listeners are backing you up, or that the government is backing you up, or that these corporate underwriters are backing you up, unless, you're doing a story that's right on spot to who one of your corporate underwriters is, right? But the grant stuff, as I said before, the grant stuff goes right to the content. You've been given a grant to deliver a certain kind of content, and that can come with more strings or less strings or no strings or whatever, but you know where you're getting your money from. And you're conscious of that, and you can't help it.
Well, Bill, I think we should keep up this conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks, Bill.
You bet, Paul.
As Bill Poorman, he is a journalist who has worked in public broadcasting, public radio, and public television, and is a former chairman of the board of directors here at Community Radio WEFT. And we're talking about the state of public broadcasting. What are some of the problems and what could be some solutions? And I hope to keep up this conversation with Bill because he thinks about it deeply and is very committed to seeing more progressive and forward-looking journalism, be it on radio or television. And this is Media Geek. One little bit of news I want to mention before the show wraps up here. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that there was unfortunately a fire at KOOP Community Radio, COOP, or Co-op Radio, in Austin, Texas. It was the third fire in that station's short history, and it happened at a new studio, destroying it. Well, someone has been arrested in what police are calling an arson at Co-op Radio, and it's a 24-year-old former volunteer has been arrested. And it doesn't make me feel much better that someone has been arrested. It's really too bad that a community radio volunteer would go so far as to set fire to a station. I've been in community radio now going on about 15 years, and I realize it's something which people feel passionately about, and they should. They should feel passionate about community radio. And it has many much great promise and is one of the few democratically run media in the world, and certainly in most towns. And people bring to community radio their hopes and their dreams of what they hope the world would be like. And sometimes it's too difficult to square that vision, to square those dreams with what other people are envisioning and dreaming. And we try to work it out at times. And I think most of the time in most stations, it does get worked out rather well in a way which is consensual, in a way which is grounded in deliberation, discussion, fruitful debate, constructive debate, which are the hallmarks of democracy. But not always, and not everyone is satisfied. And, you know, democracy does not mean that I get my way. Democracy means I'll work with others to try and figure out how, to the best of our abilities, we can figure out what way satisfies our true goals and what is most important to us. But destroying it, whether by fire or other means, is certainly not the way. And sometimes there are those of us who have to take leave of the enterprise because we've gotten to the point where we can no longer see our way through, where perhaps what we want to see happen isn't happening and we aren't able to convince others. Sometimes it falls in ourselves because we're not able to find the words or no longer able to find the wherewithal or patience within ourselves. And sometimes it's in others. But the best thing to do at that time is to step away and to take a break. It's a big world. There's a lot of things out there, and there's a lot of ways to communicate, and there's a lot of ways to work with each other. And certainly setting fire is not a way. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.